Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Let's get on with the show.
You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on today's episode, which is being dropped on the 13th day of August 2020. We'll be talking with Aram Lighton, the host of Locked On Marlins and Locked On MLB Prospects. We're going to be talking about the past, present, and future of baseball, and then wrap it up with the Fish, who are taking us a little bit by surprise. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Podbeam. You know how to listen to a podcast. You're listening to one right now, unless you're on the website, which is LockedOnMLB.com. We are on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. We're at Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And during these trying times, stay home, be safe, wear a mask, and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. Hey, why not Locked On Marlins or Locked On MLB Prospects? And by sheer coincidence, I have on my computer right now the host of both of those shows. It's Aram Lighton. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. A lot to talk about, especially with the Marlins and with the new show with the Prospects. So I'm pumped. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, yeah, I'm very eager to talk to you about both of those things. Initially, I warned you we were just going to talk about the new Prospects show. But man, who would have thought there would be a lot to talk about with the Marlins in this Reader's Digest truncated season that we had? I want to say full disclosure at the top, I said before this weird abbreviated season started, I said, and some people thought I was joking, I was actually being serious, that I was kind of pulling for the Marlins because every time they win the World Series, which has been as many times as the Mets, as many times as the Indians, as many times as the Phillies, more times than the Angels, is it's always a little weird when they win the World Series for everyone else. I don't know what it's like in Florida, but it's always been a little bit odd when they win the World Series. Like, not that it's undeserved. It's just, that felt a little strange. And so this whole year feels a little strange. So for me, it felt like this seems like the right time for them to win. Now, that being said, I did not expect that they would win 8 of their first 9 games. And as you and I were talking before we started recording this, and as I said in yesterday's episode of Locked On MLB, because this is an abbreviated season, all you really need are 2 decent months to become a playoff team. And if you're starting with a foundation where you're above 500, it's easier to make those 2 months count. And you're basically asking the Marlins, can you have a decent August and September? And if so, you got a shot to win.
Yeah, and that's the amazing thing is, you know, the Marlins, I would say, had a more competitive core by a good margin compared to last year, just by the additions. They got a couple good veterans in Jesus Aguilar, bounce back candidate, who's been off to a good start, Corey Dickerson, Jonathan Villar. While these guys aren't household names, the Marlins started 14 different outfielders last year that were all no longer with the organization now. So you're looking at a big difference, at least in just a more presentable lineup. But then you factor in the whole COVID situation, and it makes no sense that this team got off to the start that it did, especially considering that they swept the Orioles. Everyone says, oh yeah, it's the Orioles. But then look at the Orioles. They're beating everybody else. It makes no sense. But it's just the way things have been going. Right now, you could make the case for Donovan Solano to win MVP. Maybe him or Fernando Tatis. I think the latter would not be a surprise. The former is just insane. But that's just the way things have been going. In regards to your comment about the Marlins potentially making the playoffs, they just have to tread water at this point. You know, the playoffs are extended. The Marlins are 3 games over 500. If they can just tread water until the reinforcements come back, because it was their bullpen and starting rotation that was ravaged by this outbreak, who knows what can happen? And like you said, it's been funky when the Marlins make the playoffs, wild card team both years, They go all the way to the World Series and win it all. And in 2003, they were about 15 games under 500 when they fired their manager, move forward with McKeon, call up a young 20-year-old named Miguel Cabrera and another 20-year-old named Dontrell Willis, and they helped lead them to the promised land. So who knows what can happen? I do know the Marlins do have some prospects knocking on the door, and who knows if they could end up reinforcing that run.
Yeah, and what you can also hope for is that the possibility of some of the teams that people are really counting on to be, you know, big-time contenders this year having a potentially bad couple of months. I mean, it works the other way, that if you are a mediocre team without a lot of, for the lack of a better word, fanfare before a season, but you have two decent months, well, if you're a team that everyone's expecting to do great and you have a subpar couple of months, I mean, lest we forget, after 60 games, excuse me, last year, the Washington Nationals weren't even a wild card team. And they were sub 500 at the end of 60 games. So you can be a team, an elite team like Washington, and have a bad first 2 months. And you could be a team that wound up having losing records like San Diego or Texas or Colorado. And if you look at them at the 60-game mark, and they looked like playoff contenders at that point. So, you know, a team like Washington's off to a clunky start. The Mets are off to a clunky start. Milwaukee's off to a clunky start. I mean, you're seeing some teams that people were expecting to be quality teams that were either in the playoffs last year or contended for the playoffs. They have to play catch up. And that for a team like the Marlins, and you're seeing that there's a couple of the, you know, San Diego, I think, is the prime example of a team that could, they're off to a fantastic start. And if they just tread water, you could see them a cinch making the postseason. And I think the Marlins are in a similar boat. And, you know, they've had some contribution for some players that I certainly was not expecting. And, you know, not the least of which is, you know, Brian Anderson has been hitting at a really solid clip. Corey Dickerson's been doing he's had some hits here and there. And Francisco Cervelli, his overall stats are not great, but it seems like every hit he has is a big one.
That guy has just been something else. And I will say, I mentioned this actually on the Marlins podcast, and I'm glad you mentioned Cervelli. It's the fact that his value really comes from the way he's been handling the situation behind the dish, because Jorge Alfaro is supposed to be the starting catcher. And that was the guy that the Marlins were counting on to make a big jump this year. He was a former top 100 prospect, came over in that Real Muto trade that also included Sixto Sanchez. But this situation where you're either having some pitchers come straight up from A-ball to make their major league debuts, you have some journeymen that the Marlins claim off waivers that Don Mattingly's maybe never seen pitch, and so many just players, so much unknown. And Cervelli has done a great job at just handling everybody. You got to call games for pitchers that you're not familiar with. And we see how much in history, just how certain pitchers are so much more comfortable with certain catchers. There's been backup catchers that would be out of the league if it weren't for some certain aces that just love pitching to their guys, which we've seen in the past. And with Cervelli just being able to mitigate this situation behind the dish, and to be able to call games with guys he's probably never spoken to before this, you got to tip the cap to him. And the fact that he goes yard with two outs and a 3-0 count, down three runs to tie the game last night, Marlins then ultimately drop it. But it furthers your point there. He's just been coming up clutch, and it's been fun to watch.
And he's someone, I don't always put a ton of emphasis on someone's like postseason background and everything, especially because, yes, he has a World Series ring because he was part of the 09 Yankees, but, you know, he was a reserve catcher. He only got in a couple of games. But that being said, he is one of the few people who have been on a team that has gone to the postseason, that he's been able to say, yeah, I've at least been in that environment. I've been around some of the people when he was backing up Posada and playing alongside some of those players. I think on a team like the Marlins, which in some of the years, especially after they, you know, after the death of Fernandez and after they purged Stanton and Ozuna and Yelich, my God, that was their outfield just a few years ago, that to have someone who actually isn't a minor leaguer on the team, It's funny. One of the podcasts I do is Bull Durham Minute, where we break down the movie Bull Durham, and he's almost the Crash Davis of this group. Not a great player, but someone who's at least been there, done that. And you see a lot of times people who have become managers have been catchers, and it's not always the star catchers. A lot of times it's the players who were able to observe a lot and be able to study a lot, and maybe he's acting like a kind of a de facto coach on that team.
I think you make a great point, and it's something that people, Marlins fans, didn't expect and now are seeing. Of course, it was the veteran presence that people were hoping, fans were hoping that he would help with Alfaro's development, but he has helped with everybody. You see him in the dugout, even when he's not in the game, he's talking with the pitching coaches and whoever's on the mound or who's just came out of the game, and he's playing a part in that. He really is a de facto coach, and it's been great because you pair him with Don Mattingly, and there's a lot of good minds there that finally are trying to help polish some of these young players. And like you mentioned, it's good to have some continuity in some veteran leadership where the Marlins, some of the guys that they acquired, you know, Dickerson leads by example. I'm not sure about the leadership of Jonathan Villar. I've been going on some rants lately where I've never seen someone swing in 3-0 more frequently and just in horrible situations where he swings at a 3-0 curveball in the dirt, or he chases a high fastball, pops it up to the infield, like inexcusable things. And those are not the things you want your young hitters to see. I'm not saying VR is a bad guy, but it's just, you want some guys that'll lead by example. Curtis Granderson was that guy last year. And now the Marlins have that with Cervelli. It's nice to see. And in this miracle run right now, I call them the Miracle Marlins. I don't know how long this can last. They've lost a couple games in a row now. They got to beat Nate Pearson when we're recording this. We'll see what happens when it comes out. But it's going to be a challenge. But if they tread water, they've got a lot of good players coming back, young players that were looking good in that first series against the Phillies that I actually think are legitimate pieces that are here to stay. And Sandy Alcantara and some other young pitchers, Nick Neidert, who I think will get on the radar of some people. That being said, some of the players that are putting it together for the Marlins right now, it's not sustainable. So we'll just see if they can tread water and survive in advance until hopefully some of these players, I know they're doing well health-wise, but can finally test negative and get back into the lineup.
I'm going to just bring up one more name that kind of epitomizes this strange season we have with the Marlins before we take a break here, and that is Brandon Kinstler, inserting him into the bullpen. This is, of course, his first year with Miami, and he's a 10-year veteran. He made the All-Star team in 2017. He's been on two different clubs that have become playoff teams, the Nats when they won the East in 17. He was part of the Cubs when were in the wild card game in 2018. And so, that's someone who has been around a while and has had some success. And to be able to, I sometimes think what I call on the podcast, the tyranny of the save, which is that there's sometimes too much managing to have your best reliever pitch the ninth inning. I think that in the case of this Marlins team, to say, hey, the final inning is going to be thrown by a guy who's been there, done that. We can anchor that. And some of the parade, I had to check if I pitched a game for the Marlins this year. I mean, that's how crazy it's been. So to take someone with experience, and again, a former All-Star, I'm not saying he's Raleigh Fingers, but I'm saying he's a guy who has been there, done that. You take care of that, and we'll figure out some of the middle innings. I think that sort of stability sometimes would help a team in flux like the Marlins at least have some sense of an anchor.
100%. And it's funny. It's almost like I gave you a checklist before the podcast, because this is a couple of things that I really wanted to talk about with especially the new rule. The Marlins ultimately decided to not use Kinstler last night, and I was arguing in the Locked On Marlins show that they should have went to him in the 10th, because when you don't score in the top of the 10th, in the bottom of the 10th, you've got a runner on second. He represents the winning run, no outs. And they were playing splits, going with a lefty against a lefty and all of this, you know, fancy stuff. I get splits. I like it in certain situations. But with the new rule being that you have to be in for three batters, plus the new rule with a runner on second, I want to go to my closer in that situation, survive for another inning so you can make it to the 11th. And then if you can score there, at least you have a one-run cushion to go with the splits then. Kinstler finally gives the Marlins something that they haven't had, and that is a legitimate closer. like you said, he's not Raleigh Fingers, but he is a closer in the major leagues that is above average. And the Marlins haven't had that. I mean, the Marlins tried it with Heath Bell back in the day. That was a disaster. And since then, you know, they've tried trial and error with a few different guys, but they've never really ponied up and given a multi-year contract to a closer for maybe the reason of Heath Bell, maybe just because a rebuilding team doesn't need to go out and get a closer. They did trade for Chris or for Fernando Rodney, giving up Chris Paddock, which still haunts me. And that was another reason maybe why they didn't want to invest too much into closers. Kinsler was the perfect marriage of low cost, but still a good option. And now he really anchors this bullpen that has been the big reason why the Marlins have been competitive. They were eighth in bullpen ERA going into yesterday's game. And that was just something that the Marlins never had before. Again, I don't know if it's sustainable, but that has to be a big part of the success so far is the bullpen ERA and being able to get outs.
Well, it may not be sustainable, but you're not asking them to sustain it over a 162-game season, and that's kind of the point I was making. You can see teams sustain stuff for a couple of months that can be surprising, and I think that's what you're asking this team to do, and you're building on a foundation that's a winning foundation. And, yeah, they have to make some repairs. Yeah, they have to tinker with it and look for parts, but – I think they may be in a position where they're starting from in terms of looking for parts and doing the tinkering is a better place than people were expecting. Now, let me tell you something about looking for parts and for doing tinkering. I got my car, and sometimes I got to get parts for my car, and I got to do things to fix things and make them right. Now, I can go to a chain store for that. But did you know something, Aram? Did you know that chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfs like ourselves? Did you know that?
Yeah, I found out the hard way, actually. My Jeep wasn't running when I went up to go pick it up from school in New York, and I had to take care of it myself. And I wish I used Rock Auto because I ultimately had to pay a pretty penny. I was in a pinch, had to hurry up, and I wish I could have not paid for the different rate.
Well, that's right. And as you alluded to, rockauto.com, they got prices that's the same for everybody. For you, for me, for Don Mattingly, anybody. They're reliably low. It's always the lowest price instead of changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. That's bananas. Rockauto.com, that's for everybody. And you know what? This is the best thing. You may not have been aware of this, but it does not require membership or an account login. Now, so what do they got? Do you know what they got?
Everything.
They got everything! Engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, new carpet. I bet they have the little baby on board signs you stick on the side window. Whether it's for your Classic or for my Ford, they got everything you need. Just need a few easy clicks and it's delivered directly to your door. So, Aram, listen up. I do not want you to get this information incorrect. You go to rockauto.com now. Or after we record this, and see all the parts that's available for your car, your truck, or in your case, your Jeep. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Where are they going to, Aram?
RockAuto.com. I'm going there next time too. I can tell you that after the bill I just got.
Well, that must have given you some tension, that bill. That must have been something that made you feel uneasy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. It doesn't matter if you're podcasters like us, you're a professional athlete, stay-at-home parent. Everybody needs support to make it through the day. Now, luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, recharge when life gets chaotic and you spend too much on your Jeep. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or a shareable squeeze tube. I'd share my squeeze tube with you, buddy. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need when it matters most. And to make it easy to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're giving our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the code LOCKEDONMLB at checkout. Once again, that's cbdmd.com, promo code LOCKEDONMLB for 25% off your purchase for superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. All right, man, I'm a little bit relaxed. I use my CBDMD. We did the squeezable tube, and we're back. Arm, Lighten here. We talked Marlins. Now let's talk MLB prospects, because you also host the Locked On MLB Prospect Show. Do I have the name correct there?
Yeah, you do, and it's something I'm really excited about, because the Marlins show is great. I love the Marlins fans. It's really a good core base. People like to make fun of the Marlins fans, but this MLB Prospect Show too has a really good core of just, there's a huge market for people that want to know what's going on in the minor leagues, whether it's the future of your team or just prospects in general that you enjoyed watching in high school, college, whatever it may be. And I like being able to bring personal interviews with these guys, and then also just giving some analysis on what I think with the latest updates on the top 100 lists and everything like that, because I'm a minor league play-by-play broadcaster also. And that's something that I really enjoy more than anything. And I love podcasting. Play-by-play is my just passion. And watching these guys play, taking notes beyond just the play-by-play, being able to talk about the players and who I think is going to be the next star in this game, like we're seeing Fernando Tatis blossom before our eyes. It's really cool to be able to see what the future of the game is before it happens and still see them play baseball and talk about it.
By the way, I got to show that I have a tremendous amount of respect for the fact that you're starting up a show that is basically about minor league baseball in a year where there's no minor league baseball being played.
Yeah.
That is really, that's picking Normandy for your beach party right there. But at the same time, we do have a future of baseball. We do still have prospects. And I want to talk to you about some of the ones who have been called up maybe prematurely, but we need to have them up right now. And some of the ones you think are going to make an impact maybe this year or maybe next.
Yeah, absolutely. And right before I get to that, you bring up a really good point, and something I'm really excited about with the show is that it features a weekly interview with some of the top prospects in the game from all 30 teams, and especially the players that aren't a part of the taxi squad. Don't you want to know what they're doing? How are you staying sharp in this quarantine? I mean, I had Griffin Conine on, second round pick of the Blue Jays. That interview's out right now. And he was talking about how he built a batting cage in his backyard, got a pitching machine, put it together, and he's just been making adjustments with his swing this whole quarantine time. And it's actually been a blessing in disguise for him as a hitter, because he's been able to tinker more than ever. And, you know, that's just these unique stories that you're going to get from these players that you just wouldn't be able to find. And it'd be hard to know what's going on with these guys if you didn't have this interview. So I'd like to be able to fill in the blanks a little bit and let fans know, hey, your favorite prospect or one of the prospects that's a future of your team, he's doing just fine. Don't worry. He's training pretty hard still. And it's cool to hear about what they're doing. And Nick Gonzalez, seventh overall pick of the Pirates, I just got a chance to talk to, and that episode will be out very soon. Probably be out by the time people are listening to this. And it's just he's one of the guys that I think is going to be a future star of this game. But to get into the guys present, it's been amazing watching Fernando Tatis, as I mentioned, do what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen some teams, as you mentioned, call up guys earlier than we thought they would. It's cool. I like seeing the aggression, because we see service time manipulation, all of these things that are so frustrating as fans and people that, you know, want to see their prospects sooner. But to see some of these prospects be moved up quickly, that's really exciting. And the Padres, I think they're going to get their no-hitter sooner rather than later, because they're calling up. They called up Luis Patino. He did struggle out of the bullpen. But if Mackenzie Gore gets a chance this year, and I do think it would be a little aggressive, but you talked about it earlier, they look like a playoff team maybe if they can stay afloat. Why not bring up your best pitching prospects? Mackenzie Gore could get you your first Padres no-hitter, and that would be something special.
In full disclosure, as I do my pick, I'm positive that the first Padres no-hitter is going to be a combined one. I'm positive it's going to be one of those weird ones where it's like six dudes and the first guy has to leave because his shoulder got tight, and they just bring up a parade and everyone looks up at the seventh. Like, they haven't let up a hit, have they? You know, like that weird no-hitter in Mexico that the Dodgers had a few years ago. Or there was an Astros no-hitter, I think it was in 03 or 04 in Yankee Stadium, where there was like seven pitchers because I think Brandon Backey or Roy Oswalt, someone got hurt like in the first, and they just brought out a parade of relievers. And so you got to see all these people who would not normally be listed amongst no hitter throws. Yeah, there they are. But yeah, I would love to. I love seeing some of the young players come up. I like Luzardo pitching for Oakland this year. I think he's been a lot of fun. Whenever I see Tatis, the White Sox have been very good at some of their deals that they've made in recent years to bring young players to the team. Obviously Moncada, obviously Eloy Jimenez. But man, they whiffed on sending Tatis to San Diego for James Shields. I mean, I understand going for it and you're not always sure which prospect is going to pull, you know, Matt LaPorta, anybody. There are times there are prospects that everyone thinks are going to be huge stars. Kyle Drabek is another one that just doesn't pan out, but man, that was that bit them on the butt there. But yeah, Tatis Jr., Luis Robert, Joe Adele. I like seeing some of these players up already.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite one to watch? Who's besides Tatis Jr., who's your favorite young player to sort of to look at? They're getting their early look at in the major leagues.
So I swear it's like we coordinated something before this, because I just was talking about Luzardo and I wanted to do a feature episode on him because Luzardo is special. And I'll tell you why. And I want to watch every start he makes this year, because he has just this arsenal that you do not find often. It's a fastball from a lefty that can run up to 98, 99 miles an hour. But then he has a sinker that he throws that will top out at around 96. So then you pair that with a slider that sits at 85 to 90, and all three are plus pitches. And he's also got a good changeup, and he throws them all around 20% of the time. So he really keeps hitters on their toes. He's good at, he's lights out against lefties, still good against righties. But the thing that really excites me the most about him is that even if his stuff isn't on that day, so to speak, that 96 mile per hour sinker is enough to be able to get guys to ground out, get the big double plays, still be competitive, where you hear about pitchers being able to compete when they don't have their best stuff. To me, that's what makes the difference between a top of the rotation guy and some of the bottom of the rotation guys, is being able to compete when you don't have your best stuff. Luzardo is always going to be a pitcher that's going to strike out hitters at a pretty ridiculous rate, but he's also going to get ground balls at a pretty ridiculous rate. And that marriage of a great ground ball pitcher, he gets ground balls at about 50%, which is about 6 to 7% higher than the league average. The marriage of high volume of strikeouts, high volume of ground balls is incredibly rare and incredibly impressive. As for some of the other trades you're talking about, that's what I love about prospects, is you can look back and say, what the hell were they thinking? Or hindsight's 20/20, but they got a World Series out of it. For example, relating back to the Marlins, they traded Adrian Gonzalez for Ugwith Urbina, who is now in prison for attempted murder. But Ugwith Urbina.
Yeah, but that's nitpicking.
Yeah, that's nitpicking. But he did help them win a World Series. He closed out ball games. So
yes, he did.
It's, you know, it's just part of it. I think about the Yankees, where they are able to get Gleyber Torres from the Cubs and then get Aroldis Chapman back. It's just like there's some crazy things with prospects. And Luzardo was traded for Sean Doolittle. There's really some interesting trades that go into it that it's fascinating to me. But I am really excited about Jared Kelenic more than anybody. He's not going to make a chance. I don't think he's going to get a chance to come up this year, obviously. But he is maybe one of the most pure hitters, five-tool type of player. He reminds me of a Michael Brantley type, but with more power. I really am eager to see what he can do. Joe Adell's gotten off to a slow start. I really am high on him and his tools. I'm excited to see if he can kind of turn it around, because the Angels need him. We talk about teams with slow starts. They need a spark. It looks like they're starting to figure it out offensively, but Joe Adell needs to be a part of that team and be a part of that offense, because Mike Trout can't do it by himself, but he's just about doing it by himself right now, though Rendon and Ohtani are starting to wake up a little bit.
Well, I want to circle back for a second to Chris Bassett, not Chris Bassett, to Jose Luzardo. That having him in that rotation with Chris Bassett, with Sean Manaea, I mean, all of a sudden it's made that team and Frankie Montas, it's made that A's team look like it's putting together the type of rotation that's going to really make them a legit pennant contender for whatever pennant's going to be. On the team that I've been following the closest this year, it's been a little disappointment from what we've seen from Evan White, as he's he leads the league in the category. Unfortunately, it's strikeouts, which you're kind of not wanting to have from your potential slugging first baseman. Is this just a 3-week small sample size yips, or has he been called a little too early?
You know, I would say it's a little bit of both, because he definitely was called up a little quickly when you consider the fact that he only played 92 games in AA last year, though he is 23 mm-hmm. years old. So at this point, you're like, you want to see what he's got. I just would like to have seen a little bit more in the minor leagues before calling him up. And if we had a normal year this year, I would assume that he would have spent a couple months in the minor leagues to get going before, you know, getting the call up. He would have been up at some point this year. The thing is we talk about how teams, if they get off to a slow start, that they press. How about the players? You're making your major league debut in a 60-game season. You start off a little slow. You're pressing, because now all of a sudden, if you don't figure it out quickly, it's going to be a tough year. And I see that Evan White is definitely pressing. The one thing that he has been doing a great job of is playing defense. And his glove, while, you know, first base isn't a premier defensive spot, he made an incredible catch running into about straightaway foul territory in right field the other day. He is a premier defender, and it takes a little bit of pressure off of the bat, but first base is a premier offensive spot, and he's got to be able to hit. It's only been 72 plate appearances, 66 at-bats. You mentioned the strikeouts, 31 of them. To me, it's a little bit of being overmatched, but that compounds when you start pressing. And you can see he's either overly aggressive at the plate right now or too passive and quickly finding himself in 0-1, 0-2, 1-2 pitchers counts. And it's just a recipe for disaster right now. And that's the thing that happens sometimes with these prospects, is you get off to a slow start, then you either don't know whether to be overly aggressive or you're too passive. And either way, you end up striking out a lot. A little bit of both for Evan White. I would say I'm not worried about him, though. I think he'll work it out. He'll finish the year all right. He'll start to hit a stride. But overall, you know, this year's probably doomed for him in regards to hitting over 250. But if he finishes strong and comes out having learned something, at least you got something out of this abbreviated season. Because though the Mariners are off to a great start, and you look at Kyle Lewis, who is maybe exceeded expectations to a ridiculous degree, it compensates for Evan White a little bit. But you'd like to think Evan White could figure something out like Kyle Lewis has.
I think you're right in a way that this is a weird year that almost everyone gets a mulligan. This, for some teams, this is going to be like an extended spring training to bring some of their prospects up and give them some experience in the majors. And maybe he could, you know, they're doing it in front of no stands. There's no season between April and the end of July. It's everything feels weird. So you can almost give any player a mulligan here. Okay, last thing to talk about before I sign you off here. Who do you think is going to win the Rookie of the Year in the American League and the National League?
Yeah, so, I mean, Kyle Lewis is running away with it right now. And right now, it's got to be Lewis. That being said, Luis Robert still looks good. I think that he's going to fade a little bit. You look at his BABIP, which is a big indicator of luck to a degree. His BABIP is unsustainable. It's at 450 right now. So you figure he's going to slow down a little bit. He has slowed down a bit. Kyle Lewis has to slow down. This guy's not going to hit 400. I do think that he's made some major adjustments, and it's something I'll get into in one of the next episodes, analyzing his swing and some of the adjustments he's made. But don't sleep on Lizardo, because now he's moved into the rotation. And a big factor in Rookie of the Year this year is volume, opportunity, because it's such a limited sample size. Gun to my head, I'm saying Kyle Lewis, but I'm going to put Jesus Lizardo at number two as a dark horse to sneak in ahead of Robert, just because he's going to continue to go out there and put together consistent starts. It's just going to be more if Kyle Lewis doesn't fade in the second half. And I do think that the league is going to adjust to guys like Robert and Lewis. And that's what makes a big difference between a player that has a sophomore slump or not, is whether they can adjust to the league adjusting to them. It's that second adjustment that really is an indicator of sustainable success. I think they both will be able to do that, but you only have so many games to finish strong, and Lizardo could end up being the dark horse there, but Lewis is the safest pick. As for the NL, I think it's a little more clear cut. Dustin May is just running away with it, in my opinion. He has really come out and looked like a different pitcher in 2020. He was used out of the bullpen mostly last year. he comes into spring training 1.0 and then summer camp, spring training 2.0, with added velocity to his fastball and sinker that it really is. It's a two-seam with sink. And the only rookie and one of the only players in baseball that throws a sinker harder than Lizardo is May. And he's run it up to 99, which is the hardest in all of baseball. So you compare that sinking action with the velocity. Dave Roberts said it best. His filth meter is just going off the charts now. And with the team that he's on, the just situation that he's in, it's incredibly favorable. And he's running away with it. The only guy that could maybe make a push if he has a crazy offensive run in the second half of the year here is Carter Kieboom. But right now, Dustin May, runaway candidate for me in the NL.
Yeah, well, right now, you're my runaway candidate for favorite new guest of the year so far. So, Aram Layton, where can people listen to your show?
Absolutely. So, my personal account, at Aram Layton 8 on Twitter. And then if you want to look up the MLB prospects, it's Locked On MLB Prospects on all platforms, just like Sully always lists out really eloquently in the beginning of the show. I got to step my intro game up there. And then, of course, at Locked On Marlins, if you want to figure out how the hell the Marlins are making this magical run, if they continue it. But at LO underscore MLB Prospects on Twitter is where I'll be putting out a lot of videos of swing analysis, a lot about why certain guys to me might be a breakout candidate. And then, of course, weekly interviews, as I mentioned earlier. Nick Gonzalez, 7th overall pick, first round pick of the Pittsburgh Pirates, is this week's interview. There'll be an interview with a high level prospect every single week. I'm sure your favorite team will have a prospect on the show sometime soon, and I always will be putting out a schedule so you can see and look forward to what prospects might be on the show, and I think you'll enjoy some of the interviews that we have. I like to try and get to a more in-depth level with the hitting philosophy and what makes them so good, so I hope you guys enjoy that and get a chance to listen to it, and I appreciate the opportunity, Sully. We'll hopefully have to do this again, and I can solidify my Rookie of the Year award for your show here.
Well, look, this has been great having you on the show. Thanks so much. I'm going to put links for it up at Sully Baseball on Twitter and Locked On MLB underscore net. For everyone else, follow us on those sites and on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. This has been Locked On MLB for the 13th day of August 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.